Afternoon, I'd like to call the House Labor and Commerce Committee to order. Today is Monday, February 26th, 2024. Let the record reflect the time is 3:17 p.m. Today we have present Representative Prox, Representative Wright, Representative Carrick, Vice Chair Ruffridge, and myself, Chair Sumner. The staff will be assisting us today are Kevin Allen with House Records, Zachary Lawhorn with the LIO, and Clark Bickford, my staff and committee aide to House Labor and Commerce. We have bills on the agenda today, starting with House Bill 385. I would like to invite Representative Eastman to approach the committee. Put yourself on the record and begin your presentation, please.
Well, thank you. So, Representative David Eastman, House District 27. And here to talk with you about House Bill 385. Hopefully you have a copy of the sponsor statement and sectional. I'll just go through the four slides we have before us. So the question of occupational license fees is something I'm sure members of the committee at this point are well versed in. The particular concern that led us to put forward legislation was the cost of license fees that vary from year to year, particularly in those license pools that are smaller. And one of the things we initially looked at doing was trying to set aside a specific way of calculating licensing fees based on the pool size of available applicants or current licensees. That had some downsides. So what we ended up looking at is some type of cap to make sure that no matter what happens, particularly as far as investigations in a particular year, that those who are applying for and holding a license can have certainty that their fees, you know, in the coming year will not be incredibly excessive. And so they can better make decisions about whether or not they want that license or want that occupation and career field. Now, another bill which relates very similar to this is going to be House Bill 314, which the governor's put forward, actually put forward after we had written this particular piece of legislation. So I wanted to briefly compare the two. So the problem is, as I see it, is that when you have the high volatility from year to year and from career field to career field, you limit those who are going to be able to enter the career field and those who are going to remain in the career field. So it is mostly for the barrier to entry that we're concerned about reducing that. Obviously, another aspect which comes up from time to time is that military spouses are particularly sensitive to being able to have their licenses either transfer from out of state to in state or set up in a career field that they, you know, have experience in when they arrive for whatever short period of time they will be in the state, some number of years. And so it was with a sensitivity to those concerns that we, you know, approached the problem. So with House Bill 385, you do have some pros and cons. The pros that we see are you do get a reduction in some of the excessive costs, at least for some of the licensees, certainly not for all, but at least for some. You do get a reduction in that volatility, but on the con side, you then have a shifting of those costs. Those who are not receiving any type of income pursuant to the license would be able under this legislation to not pay a license fee that year. That those costs in turn would be shifted to others who are paying, perhaps up to that 20% cap. You also have some practical matters. Under the current situation, all licensees are able to apply online to get their license renewed. The online software does not permit you know, a unique application with unique costs and a unique process for each person that's applying. So you'd have to go back to paper applications for those who are taking advantage of this new, you know, 20% cap option for their license. You also have additional costs of staff time to the department. And so You are not eliminating any costs with this particular bill. You are just moving them from one place to another. So let's contrast briefly with House Bill 314, which sees, I think, the same problem and approaches it a little bit differently. Very glad to see this particular piece of legislation. As I see it, it does deal with the reduction in excessive licensing fees. You do end up with a more certain fee environment, which will help with the recruitment and the retention. Hopefully we can take some of these small licensing pools and grow them, which would, you know, in short order, solve a lot of the problems here. Some of the cons we've identified with that piece of legislation, you do have the cost of investigations don't go away. Now they're more borne by the department. You do also have, as you had in the previous problem without any of these pieces of legislation, you have the issue of moral hazard. You know, who is going to be responsible for their conduct? Right now, unfortunately, those who don't have a license and are practicing without that license, and those who have a license and are engaged in some type of misconduct, effectively their decisions are being borne, the cost of those decisions, the consequences, by other licensees in their license pool. And obviously that is a downside, something that either of these two pieces of legislation would address. But you do still have, when the department is now bearing those costs or a greater percentage of those costs, then some of the consequences for decisions go to the department, as well. And so if you have individuals that are not being sensitive to the cost of their conduct, then someone else is going to be bearing those costs. If I think most ideally what I would be looking for are some of the solutions in House Bill 314, but with a greater focus on both discouraging the filing of unnecessary complaints and unnecessary investigations, and then also making sure that, to the greatest extent possible, once misconduct has been identified, that the individuals responsible for that misconduct bear the cost of that misconduct, whether that's investigation fees or whatever other costs are associated with that. I am open to questions.
Well, thank you, Representative Eastman. A very interesting idea. Are there questions from the committee? Representative Carrick.
Thank you, through the chair, to Representative Eastman. I see it would be up to 20% cap, it looks like, or one-fifth of the total gross income. And just curious how you arrived at that number.
Great question. Thank you, and through the chair. We looked at what would be the highest potentially reasonable fee someone might be asked to pay, and we thought that anything higher than 20% would be obviously excessive and would certainly discourage applicants from pursuing the license and engaging in the occupation.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Eastman, similar line of question as Representative Carrick. So just trying to understand the 20% cap. So this would be a voluntary submission of someone's gross income. So that would be their tax returns of some sort, I would imagine. And then the department could say 20% of their gross income as a result of being a license holder. So let's say a person with a license earned $100,000 in the year, then $20,000 of that could be assessed as a license fee.
It's through the chair. It's more specific than that, in that it wouldn't be someone's total gross income. It would only be the portion of that income that relates to the license that's in question. And in that case, you probably wouldn't be able to get it with something like a simple tax return, at least most tax returns. But the department could create a form that would collect the necessary information so that someone could determine and then present to the department the dollar amount for their license-generated income for that particular year. The only time they would conceivably do that is when the fee otherwise would be in excess of that amount, because it's either or. They can either take the fee that everyone else takes, or they can, through this option, demonstrate that they, you know, have a smaller amount perhaps of income from the license, in which case they would either pay nothing if they had no income from the license, or 20% of what they did make.
Understood. Follow up with me? Thank you. So, you know, we hear a lot of license issues through the chair, Representative Eastman, in this committee. And for the most part, and I see that you have this actually on the front of the presentation, certified nurse midwives, I think, might be the highest license fee in the state. But for the most part, it feels like the license fees that most pay are somewhat reasonable in the $100 or $200 range. Do you have an idea of which license fee types would be most affected outside of midwives by this potential legislation?
Sure. Again, preferable to, in the comparison between 385 and 314, you know, one of the benefits is that there's less volatility for the right now, shall we say, unaffected license groups. And so in that respect, this is not a surgical approach, and that it's applies to all of the different career fields. But the target is really just those career fields that, you know, have the excessive license, usually because the pool is so small. So that would be either brand new licenses that haven't established a significant pool of applicants yet, or some of the organizations like the midwives, for example, that, you know, for various reasons have a smaller pool.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? No? Okay. Seeing no other questions, we are going to set this bill aside until Wednesday. Thank you, Representative Eastman.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Moving on, House Bill 237 from Representative Prox. We set an amendment deadline on House Bill 237 and received no amendments. I'm now going to open public testimony on House Bill 237. Is anybody in the room wishing to testify on House Bill 237? Okay, we'll go online. There is no one online to testify, so we will close public testimony. Do any committee members have questions for Representative Prox? No. Vice Chair Ruffridge, do you have a motion?
Thank you, Chair Sumner. I move House Bill 237, version alpha, referred to as 33-LS1098/A, be advanced from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal notes.
Okay, without objection, House Bill 237 shall be reported from committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the bill file. Back on the record, next we have House Bill 290, a bill by request of the governor. I believe we have Scott Damaro. Please approach the committee, put your name on the record, and if you can begin your presentation. Thank you. Oh, and Commissioner Munoz.
Thank you, Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kathy Munoz, Commissioner Designee for the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And with me is Chief Scott Damaro of the Mechanical Inspection Unit of the department. The chief will walk us through the Certificate of Fitness program, and I will provide a few introductory remarks. The legislation before you changes the trainee certificate of fitness for plumbers and electricians from 2 years to 6 years. Currently, if a trainee fails to renew their COF or their certificate of fitness, the hours worked during that lapse cannot be counted toward their journeyman certification. The typical training period for an electrician or a plumber is accomplished in 4 years. 8,000 hours is the amount of time required. The legislation before you also increases the fee for the journeyman level certificate from $200 to $300. This has not changed since 2006. The elimination of the requirement for trainees to apply for and pay for the renewals during their training period will expedite their apprenticeship procedure overall and will avoid the very difficult situation of having to reject training hours when an individual comes to the department ready to sit for the journeyman test. With me today, as I said, is Chief Scott Domero to walk you through the Certificate of Fitness program. Thank you, Chairman.
For the record, my name is Scott Domero, Chief of Mechanical Inspection for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Thank you for the opportunity to present this to the committee. This presentation is for review of current process, and I'll move through it quickly. I welcome any questions during the presentation to clarify any of the material. Mechanical inspection performs licensing and field enforcement for plumbing and electrical code work. We provide inspections for boilers, unfired pressure vessels, and elevators. We issue certificates of operation for amusement rides and recreational devices. Additionally, we provide licensing services for boiler operations, operators, asbestos abatement, hazardous paint, and explosive handlers. The proposed legislation would extend the length of a trainee certificate of fitness to be 6 years, enough to cover the full apprenticeship program. The proposal would also increase fees for other plumbing and electrical trade licenses. This fee has not changed since 2006 and is required at this time to offset the expected loss in receipt revenue from the extension of the trainee licenses. Trainees currently have a high number of lapsed days. I refer to a lapse as a period of time where the licensee does not maintain a current certificate of fitness. When they don't have the current certificate of fitness, they are not legally performing code work, and those hours cannot be counted towards their journey level certificate. The licenses that we issue are here. You also have a handout that has these codes on it. They're abbreviated throughout this presentation. This is, as of the end of 2023, the amount of active licenses that we've had. Electrical and plumbing are the yellow and the blue in this and represent most of what we do. New licenses issued in the last 5 years. This does not include renewals. So what we see on the dotted lines is the training certificates of fitness. The solid yellow line and the solid blue line are the electrical and plumber licenses for journeyman levels, respectively. These are going up for new licenses, but overall, we still see a downward trend. This is plumbing licenses. The solid blue line is plumber journeyman. The dotted line is plumber trainees, and we are seeing a decline in overall plumbing, and the yellow line is overall electrical journeyman licenses. Despite a slight uptick in the number of trainees, we're still seeing an overall decline in people leaving these fields. Other licenses issued by the section are looking at similar declines. The one trend that we would note and expect to see is asbestos abatement, which is on the steady decline. The rest of them are rather alarming because we are getting less tradesmen to do the work for projects in Alaska. Requirements for trainees, both electrical and plumber, are very similar. 8,000 hours of on-the-job work, that can include 1,000 hours of classroom time. Hours are submitted to our department via a experience verification form signed by the employer or by their union. Once we receive the 8,000 hours that are verified, we give them an exam, passing score of 70%, and a $200 fee is what's required for the card. Barriers to training in Alaska. We are looking as a department, and specifically our section, for more ways to remove administrative barriers without dumbing down the license, essentially. We're looking to make it easier to get the licenses. These all involve some upgrade to IT infrastructure, but the biggest one is the lapsed hours. trainee card hours lapsed in the last 5 years. For electrical, it's 21,000 days. For plumbing, 15,000 days. This represents the amount of time that a trainee let their card expire, still continued to work, and then re-energized their card or re-up their card later. It doesn't include anyone who would have just let their card go and kept working. So these numbers are actually pretty low, but it's a huge number of hours. And these days represent the number of times we have to send somebody back to work to get more work in order to complete their cycle. And that delays us in getting journeyman workers out there. Requirements for renewing a trainee certificate of fitness are simply paying the $200 renewal fee. The proposed legislation would have a significant impact on our licensure. This would be simpler and cheaper for trainees to get into the trades. More significantly, they provide a safety net. Trainees that forget to lapse their license will not be penalized for that. The training that they receive in any time that would have been a lapsed license now will continue through with a good license, and we can count those hours and get them into the journey level faster. This proposed legislation would take place on July 1st, 2024. The reason for that is that it coincides with the fiscal year, and there's also a statement in there that anyone that had renewed their license and had one active can simply call or make a request to our department to extend their current license. So no one would be left behind in this. The proposed fee changes I've noted here. Roughly, we're going to see a decrease of about $58,000 due to the now not requirement to have trainee licenses renewed. The $300 journeyman level card would result in about $164,000 increase for a net gain of about $105,000 annually for the section. We are self-funded, so this is the money that we use for enforcement. The number proposed was taken from the Consumer Price Index from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. They're from 2006 to 2023, $200 then would get you about $304, would be the equivalent of $304 today. So we rounded that off to $300. That's all I've got for the presentation.
Okay, thank you. Do committee members have questions? Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, just trying to get a feel of how this works in practice. A person with the trainee license might not get enough work in the current period. Is that the problem? There just aren't enough projects available?
Through the chair, that's pretty rare. There are a lot more projects than there are people today, is what that's the general feedback. We do not have enough journeyman level licensees right now to fill all the project needs in Alaska, which is why we are trying to stem the downtrend in the number of journeymen that we issue licenses to. At the trainee level, they can pretty easily find work. The problem that we see is that they have the work. They currently have a two-year card. That card expires. When they come back at the end of their 4 years, we can't count the hours worked during that lapse period. And it's really rough to tell somebody at the end of 4 years, hey, you had a two-year period, or you had an 18-month period here. You're not ready to journey out. Go back and get 18 months of more time before we can graduate you up to the next level. So it's different for the two different levels, but the trainees specifically have trouble. When they forget the administrative requirement, they're punished for that.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Carrick.
Thank you, through the chair. Do we have any sense if the fee or the training requirement is in fact the reason why the number of acting electricians is going down, or is it more due to outmigration and other factors? And then also on the chart, it's very hard to see there's a decrease because there's like a lot of data presented on the same graphic. So can you expound a little bit on how significant that decrease has been by the numbers.
Yes. Most of the reasons are probably beyond the department's control for the lack of having journeymen available. A lot of factors have affected this. Certainly COVID, out-migration from Alaska. There's generally we're working towards improving the concept of the trades as a viable option for young people to go into. And all of that has kind of compounded into creating this reduction. To speak to the charts, this chart is new licenses issued. So the solid of note here is the solid yellow line and the solid blue line, which are new journeyman level licenses issued each year. And they are on the uptick. We get strange swings in the dotted lines, which are the training cards. I have spoken to union members and other trainers. No one really knows, aside from just cyclic year desires of the community. There's no trend that I can really pin those up and down cycles on. But we are slowly getting more journey level cards issued. The trouble is for plumbing, in the last couple of years, we are seeing a slow downtick on that blue line, which is the number of total licensed plumbers in Alaska. And then for the solid yellow line is the total number of licensed journeyman electricians in Alaska. Both are suffering the same downward trend. And the result of this will be that when projects come to Alaska, we will have to outsource that work, bringing up electricians and plumbers from outside of Alaska, and then the money goes back outside of Alaska.
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Sumner. Through the chair, just a quick question on the cost of the licensing for journeymen increasing from $200 to $300. It was, I think, the slide right before this, indicated that the amount of dollars taken in would go up relatively significantly under the proposed legislation. Is there an increased cost to the department for, because it feels like maybe the department's actual effort for license renewals would go down if the trainee licensees would be extended to 6 years. And I'm wondering for the need for additional revenues into the department.
Through the chair, for the last 17 years, we've been behind the curve because we haven't increased those fees. This specific, the trainee extension does not cost the department any more money. In fact, as you point out, it probably will save a slight amount in the non-renewals of those cards. But what we're facing is that being a self-funding agency, we have faced the same problems with inflation that everyone else has. Our cost of travel to get, we have our licensing desk in Anchorage, and then we have to cover for enforcement the rest of the state. The cost of travel, the cost of vehicles, the cost of gas has all gone up around us. So the increase in fees is essentially a separate requirement that's paired with this, but not necessarily because of this.
Just a brief follow-up. Thank you. Through the chair, from the department level then, if it's 17 years behind, what would you say the department is short potentially or shy of in funding in order to accomplish the task at hand, and would this increase cover that shortfall?
Do you want to answer for the department level or do you want me to? Okay. So what we need is to get newer vehicles in our fleet. We have a fleet of 14 vehicles. 10 of them are over 10 years old at this point. And our field investigation team spends about 7 out of 8 hours every day in their cars driving around. So increase in that infrastructure. Also, we do everything on paper right now. All of our license issuance, all of our testing is paper and manually done. We have a small database that we use to print the cards from, but we're seeking newer databases, more updated computer systems, and right now we just don't have the funding for that. We're behind due to inflation. We're spending money on vital elements, and what we need is to improve the infrastructure, which would then help us to improve both the safety of the field officers and the speed of delivery of services at the licensing desk.
And last follow-up, if I may. Would there be, thank you, through the chair, just last follow-up to that same request. Would that, those two entities or two issues, seems like those would be best suited to a capital project or a capital request rather than ongoing funding. Is there other areas where ongoing funding would be needed?
Through the chair, personnel costs, just about every cost we have that we self-fund is going up. Certainly from 2006 to today, we've faced exorbitant cost rises and not much in the way of revenue gains. So this would, without making up for the lost revenue over 17 years, at least stabilize us into today's market.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Yep. Okay, seeing no other questions, we're going to set this bill aside for future hearing. Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you. And we are just a little cleanup here. Let the record reflect that Representative Fields joined us at 3:19 p.m. And we are going, given to the volume of testimony on HB 200, we are going to roll HB 179 to Wednesday. So if anybody's here for that, they can come back on Wednesday. So next we have HB 200, another bill by request of the governor. Today we have invited testimony from industry experts. Please put your name on the record when testifying, as well as your affiliation, and provide your written testimony by email after the meeting. We will start with Sandy Powers. Powers Bingo, please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you for inviting me today. My name is Sandy Powers. I'm the business owner of Big Valley Bingo in Wasilla, and I am the president of the Alaska Charitable Gaming Alliance. So I do believe that there could possibly be a version of electronic full tabs that might be workable for the state in the future. I've done a lot of research, but I'm a retired nurse and a business owner, and there's only so much time that I can dedicate toward doing research of electronic full tabs in other states. So one of the first problems that I have is Aero International is a big electronic full tab manufacturer, and they're the primary party writing the legislation for Alaska. They also recently bought one of the largest distributors in Alaska, the Whaler Casino Supply. There's only four distributors currently in Alaska, two large ones and two small ones. And they seem to be pushing to create a monopoly in Alaska. We don't have a lot of other choices. And quite honestly, I get about half of my products from them. The electronic pull tab manufacturers will get more money than the Alaska charities. We currently spend about 15 to 20% of our adjusted gross to the out of state companies for paper, pull tab products, and bingo supplies. With the electronic the ETAB, the manufacturers and distributors get somewhere between 31 and 35% of the adjusted growth, and the charities get 30. I don't have access to the exact math because the manufacturers and distributors are quite vague on the cost, the actual cost to the charity and to the businesses. In contrast to electronic pull tabs, we currently have electronic bingo games in Alaska, and the cost is between 2 and 10%. So I can't answer for why there's such a big discrepancy in those costs. There's another problem with one of the statutes, 515-128, and it says that our in a backwards way, it says that our adjusted gross of at least 15%, but what that really means is the game average payout cannot exceed 85%. Most of the EPAB companies want 90 to 92%. So I can give you an example of the math associated with those percentages. If you have a game with $10,001 tickets, you'll get $10,000. It'll pay back $8,500 to the customers, leaving $1,500. The charity gets 30% of that, which is $450. The same 10,000 ticket count game, $1 will get $10,000, but at a 92% payout, it will pay $9,200, leaving $800. The charity gets 30%, which is only $240. So dollar for dollar, they are not the same. And there's another unusual thing about electronic pull tabs. In a paper game, if you buy a dollar ticket, there won't be any winners less than a dollar. In the electronic pull tab games, they can get, you know, so many nickel winners, dime games, quarters, 75 cents to encourage the player to continue pushing that button rather than just taking their playback ticket and maybe getting a few more tickets or something like that. And each of those tickets that are not $1 winners, as near as we can figure, cost 4 cents a piece. So if you get a nickel winner, 4 cents out of that ticket or push is going to go to the manufacturers and distributors. In the hearing of House Bill 200, there was a question asked about why the payout limits would have to be increased. In the 5 states that have electronic pull tabs, and it might be 6, I think there's another one coming online, the pull tab sales volume rose between 2 to 3 times. The payout limit, not the prize limit, have to be increased to accommodate the increased play. The Aero representative stated that the charities received about $45 million from charitable gaming last year, and that would likely be increased by an additional $20 million. My question is, if the volume of play increases 2 to 3 times, why doesn't the amount of money going to the charities double or triple? And then lastly, I have a couple of notes. Well, I'm concerned about the Alaska fiscal note being indeterminate. And as a business owner, this is concerning to me because I'm having difficulty finding the true cost to the Alaska charities and the businesses. This past week, I actually had an opportunity to speak with the North Dakota Gaming Director, Deb McDaniel. They have a similar population to Alaska. They have some gaming types that we do not. But she stated that when pull tabs were introduced to North Dakota, the gaming department went from 6 to 12 regulators. And then again in 2021, they requested 10 additional regulators but got 7. So they're up to 19 regulators at this point. So there's just a lot of questions. I really would like to see a version of electronic pull tabs written by Alaskans, Alaska charities, with the Alaska charities benefiting the most from electronic pull tabs if it ever comes to Alaska.
Okay, thank you. Next we have Dave Lambert. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
This is David Lambert. This is David Lambert. I'm currently a charitable gaming operator. I've been a charitable gaming operator longer than anyone else in the state. I've been involved with charitable gaming for 33 years and protecting the interests of the nonprofits. For those of you who do not understand what a charitable gaming operator is, most of your nonprofits, like the Breast Cancer Detection Center, the Alaska Center for Children and Adults, the Fairbanks Arts Association, their line of business is not to run charitable gaming. They have their own programs. Yes, some of them can run a raffle and make a few dollars, but for any type of money, they need someone to do it on their behalf. And Alaska has a unique system that's better than anywhere else, and we need to protect that. Sooner or later, we're going to have to go to electronic poll tabs because the cost of paper is just going out of control. 33 years ago when I got involved with poll tabs, a dollar poll tab was a dollar. Do you guys know how much a dollar poll tab is now? It's still $1, and all our costs are going up. This bill, the governor, when he introduced it, I'm sure he thought it was benefiting the nonprofits and a good deal. But there's some things in it that are downright dangerous. To begin with, under AS 05-15-180A, it would remove the legislators from out of the process ever again. It would remove the voters. It would give the department the authority to do whatever they want in the future. And I don't think that the right thing to do. You guys listened to the testimony from the department. They know how to read the reports and issue permits, but they do not understand charitable gaming. They're not out on the street. They're not dealing with the nonprofits. They're looking at reports and they're getting their percentage, but that's it. This bill was written by Arrow, for Arrow, and it's to create a monopoly. Some of the language in it bans other organizations, other manufacturers. They put limitations on there that isn't good for the industry. Arrow, their mother company, owns most of the paper poll tab manufacturers. Now, we've worked with them for 3 years trying to get something workable for the nonprofits. So far, this is not the bill. They tell us one thing, and then when they tell you guys something different. What they've been telling us all along, that it's going to be 50%. And what they're doing in other states, they're going in and they're offering a location like a bar. A bar is a vendor, someone with a liquor license. They will offer the location $10,000 to be exclusive, and then they will offer that location $10,000 per machine. They are currently doing that in other states. Now, that doesn't go to the nonprofit. That goes to a bar owner. And any of you that have a business, a laundromat or anything else, if they came in and offered you $60,000, $100,000 to put in the machines, you would take that. And with the bar deals on a percentage to the nonprofit. They don't care what the game costs. So, you know, Arrow saying it's going to be 30 to 35%. Well, for 2 years now, they've been telling us 50%. So that location can't buy anybody else's games. They can't buy, they're locked in. So whatever the price is, the bar doesn't care because they got their $100,000 or whatever, and the permittee pays. You know, we're going to have to go to it, but this needs to be written by Alaskans. We can't let the Department of Revenue write the regulations. They don't have the staffing. They don't have the knowledge of the nonprofits or the people involved in charitable gaming. Yes, we need to do something with electronic poll tabs, but it has to be workable. Some of this language in here is language that Arrow put in there. As an operator, we're limited to the number of machines that we can have. A vendor or a bar is limited to a number of machines. But dealing with a bingo hall, your biggest bingo halls are operators that take care of quite a few permits. They can only have 10 machines. But down the road, you have a bingo operator that's an MVP. They can have 500 machines. There's no limit. There's no limit to where the machines can go. They can go in every laundromat, grocery store, everywhere. There's other states that are trying to control where the machines are located. You know, they talk about there's going to be 5,000 machines, but, you know, there may be 25,000. There's no limit. And talk about an area where it's controlled by age, you have to be 21. I was just down in Illinois, and you have a sign, no one under 21 in this area, and you have these machines that look like slot machines, but they're pull tab machines, with a rope right behind the chairs where little Johnny's leaning on daddy's shoulder watching him play. And they do not even have an attendant. They have a kiosk, but like an ATM. You put your machine, your money in, pull your card out, you know, put it in the paper, just like Vegas. So, yes, we need it, but how are we going to do it to benefit the nonprofits? There's too much information that needs to go out to do it in a committee meeting. I don't know how you guys want to handle it, but it's all about protecting the nonprofits. And currently, I represent about just under 10% of the nonprofits. And the nonprofits haven't been contacting you because they don't understand what's going on. But if it would be a benefit, we could have 100 different nonprofits or 300 contact you and help you understand things. It sounds like a good thing, but it has to work for the nonprofits. And I'm available for questions.
Thank you. Next, we have Josh Lewis. Josh Lewis, please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you very much. This is Joshua Lewis, and I'm a charitable gaming operator representing nonprofits with charitable gaming permits in Fairbanks and Wasilla, Palmer, Anchorage, Kenai, Soldotna, Homer, and Kodiak. The nonprofit corporations in Alaska strengthen communities by providing the educational, health, and social services which our communities need and the state government cannot fully provide. I've personally been involved in charitable gaming for the past two decades as a self-directed permittee nonprofit, a multi-beneficiary permittee, and a charitable gaming operator. Thanks again for the opportunity to testify regarding House Bill 200. First, I believe that the introduction of electronic poll tabs will have a significant and profoundly negative impact upon the industry. The Alaska charitable gaming industry is currently the poster child for charitable gaming nationally. Provisions for Alaska's nonprofits to earn charitable gaming revenue exist in several distinct ways. No other state has these alternatives provided to their nonprofits. The introduction of electronic poll tab machines is effectively the introduction of slot machines into the Alaska market. Electronic poll tab manufacturers will take somewhere between 35% to 50% of the charity's profits when the new machines are introduced. Electronic pull tab machines provide a 5% to 15% profit, whereas current paper pull tabs provide a 20 to 23% profit. Currently, a $5 paper pull tab purchase results in $1 of profit to the permittees or nonprofit. A fourfold increase in volume or play is required to realize the same or equivalent financial return from electronic pull tabs to our state's nonprofit. Nearly all participants in Alaska Charitable Gaming will have a significant decrease in profits if electronic pull tab machines are introduced. The only participants that will see an increase in revenue are electronic pull tab manufacturers. In conclusion, I believe that HB 200 is not a good option for the state of Alaska. I'm happy to take any questions the committee members may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Jerry Lewis. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Jerry Lewis. My name is Jerry Lewis. No relation to Josh Lewis. I've been in Alaska for the last 25 years, been in gaming my entire professional career in Nevada, Colorado, and Alaska. While in Colorado, I helped write the internal control minimum procedures for the casino industry. I worked for slot machine manufacturers, and now that I'm in Alaska, I've been a distributor and most recently an operator. I've seen many types of gaming all over, and Alaska has the gold standard for charitable gaming. In my organization, we run about 30 different charitable organizations. The charities receive over $30,000 a year, and we're on pace to pay out over $1 million to charities this year. The numbers that are being spouted by the ETAB projections are hypotheticals based on states that are not similar to Alaska. Why would we risk charities' guaranteed income on a hypothetical? We currently pay about 20% of a game's profit for the average paper pull tab game. The bill doesn't specify what the manufacturer will charge for ETABs, but the numbers that are being touted, you've heard several of them, are between 40 and 50%. By simple math, that means the revenue would have to double or even triple for the charities to even come close to breaking even. If the numbers don't double, everyone except for the manufacturers will lose. The only one making money will be the manufacturers. We haven't even considered the social ills that will come from the expansion of gaming, and trust me, I've seen it. It is important to note that several other states that are experimenting with ETABs, the legislature is having to scramble to rewrite laws because of the unforeseen consequences. I agree with Sandy and several of the other people out there that ETABs are coming. I would also agree that as Alaskans, we've done it, and we can certainly sit down and write a bill that would be beneficial for everybody. But the bill is not the answer for Alaska as it's written, so I would urge you guys a no vote for myself and for our charities. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes invited testimony. We will now open public testimony. In the room, I have Mac Miner. Please, first committee, put your name on the record and begin your testimony. And we will be limiting public testimony to 2 minutes a person. Thank you.
2 minutes. I have as much time. My name is Mac Miner. I've been involved in charitable gaming for as long as Dave Lambert and as long as Jerry Lewis. My son just died. He was an operator for many years. I put him in business. I've been a designated member in charge. I've seen the whole gameplay. And the most important part is the charity itself. And that's what I hold high. And I've made sure that my charities always have spent their money right and have always been paid. Because when I got the business I got, the man I got it from, took $550,000 from the charities, and I paid it all back. So I know this game inside and out.
And the most important part is the charity itself. And whether ETABS comes to play or not, we've been here before. We've been through this whole song and dance. I'd say I've been testifying to lobby here at least 4 or 5 times over the years. And we never get anything done. What I see could happen or wish would happen, and what you got to understand, is that when the charity or, let's say, a vendor relationship comes into play, they must pay for that game at the time of delivery from the designated member in charge. And what happens with designated members in charge is they play out. What I'm saying is my kid comes in. I'll give you an example. The Juneau Gun Club. My wife told me, I come home from fishing, and my wife told me, do something with those boys. So I went and bought them guns and went up to the gun club. And lo and behold, we had a real shyster come up there and wanted somebody to play pull tabs for him because he'd come to his prize limitation. So they said, you're not doing anything. Why don't you take the test? Well, I did. And I'm sitting here today as a very successful pull tab player. And I retired 2 years ago, but I was thrust into the business again to go clean up everything after my son died. I ended up selling the business. So I know a lot about pull tabs, especially when it comes to vendor relationships. If you're going to trust the vendors to use these ETABs, you're going to have to find someone that's going to have accountability on the money. Because the money is the most important part. Want me to end it?
You can wrap it up. Thank you.
Well, I'm sorry you cut me off and I'm at the end, because I could probably give you a few lessons on how things should be run or should not be run. But the one thing I got to say is that the operator who is bonded for $100,000. That's right. I peeled $100,000 out of my pocket, and it's been sitting down at the National Bank of Anchorage for I don't know how many years, 15 or 16, collecting 0.014% interest, because pull tab revenue needs to be spent, made in 1 year and spent the next. And there's no interest bearing. There's no buildings. There's no empire building. It's made for the charities to spend their money. And I can look around town and I can show you a bunch of stuff, whether it's the hockey team, whether it's the Pioneers of Alaska, whether it's, the Nick Swim Club is my favorite. When they send me a little picture of all the kids in their swim gear, that's where the money should go, not out of state. And if you're going to craft a bill, the operators are left behind. We bond ourselves. We're responsible for our money. Where if you're a vendor, an MGP, or the fraternity, there's no accountability. They just go into business willy-nilly and no telling where the money goes. But the operator is the true manager of the money. Okay, that's all I got to say.
Thank you. Okay, next we'll go online. I have David Sandin. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is David Sandin. I'm representing Hidden Treasures Multiple Beneficiary Permit that does their charitable gaming in Juneau, and I'm their primary member in charge of gaming. Thanks for your time this afternoon. I'd like to present the following thoughts and concerns from our organization's perspective after having been involved in charitable gaming for over 30 years. Your committee's consideration. House Bill 200, as currently written, does not have a cap on the proportion of net proceeds that electric pull tab manufacturers slash distributor may charge for the use of an electronic pull tab device. If there is no cap on what may be charged for the use of an electronic pull tab device, most, if not all, of the net gains in revenues enabled by House Bill 200 will, with 100% certainty, be directly funneled outside the state of Alaska. If there is no cap on what may be charged, in addition, it is entirely unclear whether or not the software that will run electronic pull tabs will enable permit holders in jurisdictions who impose a local sales tax on the cash sale of pull tabs, as well as the exchange of playbacks for additional pull tabs to effectively collect that local sales tax. We in Juneau are particularly unique in the state, and in essence, we pay the state a tax, but we also pay CBJ a tax. In the first public hearing on this legislation, both Mr. Brandon Sapnos, the acting director of the tax division, and this committee's invited testimony from Marty Magnuson, the vice president of governmental affairs for Air International, pointed out at some length their projections for an increase in the net pull tab receipts. Their projections of an increase in net pull tab receipts may indeed come to fruition with the addition of electronic pull tabs. However, they both left unsaid where, at the end of the day, the lion's share of any profits realized from an increase in net pull tab receipts will go. I would argue the lion's share of those dollars will directly leave the state of Alaska to the betterment of the manufacturers of electronic pull tab devices, and only marginally, if at all, benefit any Alaskan charitable organizations involved. Furthermore, at their projected expense, many organizations like ours will be unable to run electronic pull tabs at all. If, however, electronic pull tabs were to be authorized by this legislation or some other legislation, I would strongly recommend any such legislation contains assertive and strong language limiting the amount of ideal net that may be charged for the use of electronic pull tab devices at no more than 15% of the ideal net of a pull tab gate. At this juncture, Hidden Treasures, a multiple beneficiary permit holder, and the member permittees who make up and own Hidden Treasures cannot support this legislation. However, if this committee chooses to proceed with this legislation, we would like to offer for this committee's consideration some potential changes to the charitable gaming statutes for your consideration in conjunction with this legislation. We would like to see the increased mandated return to charitable gaming entities who go charitable gaming permits from 30% to 35%. Everybody's talking about the charities, but nobody's talking about mandating increasing their returns. We'd like to put that on the table. We'd also like to see the current state of Alaska 3% ideal net tax, the current 3% ideal net tax that the state of Alaska charges on the ideal net to 8%. In other words, we'd like to double it. We'd like to double the amount of money that's going into the state coffers. However, if you were to do that, what we'd like to see happen is have that money split 4% to the municipalities where pull tabs are sold, and 4% of the state. That would give the state a 1% increase.
Thank you, Mr. Sandin. Please submit your recommendations or comments by email. Next, we have John Powers. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is John Powers. I'm the owner-operator of Tudor Bingo Center in Anchorage. And I, like the other operators and other folks online, as well as the comments that my wife made, Sandy Powers, she was the first one, I concur with, obviously, all of her concerns and pretty much all the concerns of everyone who's spoken thus far. Sandy and I did have an opportunity to talk to Deb McDaniel, the head regulator at the gaming division in North Dakota, and she said that she would very, very much like to entertain questions from this committee, and we can provide contact information for her or for the committee to contact Deb, because She's just a wealth of information of possible pitfalls and shortcomings that we need to look for in a potential bill. So, without dragging it out and basically repeating what everyone else just said, I would highly encourage talking with Deb McDaniel in North Dakota and have a meeting with her, maybe do some kind of a Zoom, something like that. She very much would like to talk to the legislators and the committee members and anyone else who has questions regarding House Bill 200 And it does need to be crafted by Alaskans for Alaskan charities. That's who we work for. And thank you very much for your time, and greatly appreciate the invite.
Thank you, Mr. Powers. Next, we have Jack Heesch. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is Jack Heesch. I'm the president and the primary member in charge of a nonprofit organization, Anchorage Youth and Recreation. Am I still connected? I guess I am. Anchorage Youth and Recreation is focused on youth fast pitch softball. And I'm here today to just remind everyone that not all of the nonprofits are the ones that we know off the top of our heads, such as Special Olympics or the Support Industry Alliance or the Junior Iditarod. But there are lots of little organizations such as ours, no staff, no facility. Basically, we're part of a coalition in Anchorage and I suppose statewide with people who are trying to run softball programs for young women. In 1991, the Anchorage School District asked us to take an outsourced program to begin a softball program in the 8 Anchorage schools. We accepted that. We signed a contract with them. It gives us all the responsibility and it does not provide us with any funding. And so we have to do what we have to do to be able to pay for that program. And then for all of the outgrowth of that, from high school, we've started middle school. We have a summer program that includes all ages of kids from 10 and under to 18 and under. And the best thing I can say about both the high school and travel teams, I guess, the competitive teams. In the high schools, as a former coach and somebody who talks to coaches all the time, I can assure you there are a lot of kids who stay in high school just because they want to play ball on that team. And then, to top it off, coming through our program, in any one given year, we can see anywhere from a handful of young women to maybe 10 or 12 signing up for or being offered scholarships to play ball at some college, university, junior college, take your pick. But they're off to school, and these are largely young women who would not otherwise get to go to college. So I guess my point is, I just want everybody to be aware of the fact that there are small organizations like mine that do good work, if you will, and that help improve lives and are good for Alaska. And I'm happy to take any questions, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Heesch. Next, we have Don Winchester. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony. Says questions. Yeah. Brief at ease. Next up is Don Winchester. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Could you hear me, Mr. Chair? This is Don Winchester.
Go ahead.
Yo, thank you. So, I'm representing today the Alliance for the Support of American Legion Baseball. Like Mr. Heesch right before us, we deal with baseball legion, but we also do high school baseball. We do middle school baseball. And what I'd like to just speak to for a minute is we do receive about $30,000 annually. And what that does for us as our group, and again, we have no staff, we have no office, that we've just tried to get everything back to our organization, to our players. And we call it kind of gap funding. So when you work with the school district, when kids sign up in that, they can check the box and they do not have to pay any player fees and that. And so basically for us, that the money we get from pull tabs, and that is it is a total fills the gap and helps us survive. And we have over about 1,000 kids playing baseball every summer in that. So it's a huge benefit for us to have the money to help keep the cost down for the other players, and that we can keep the kids playing, and that we can sustain ourselves here. So I listened to the other people. I agree. I think the bill is really loosely written, and I would not want to gamble on that. They're going to increase more sales than that, then we would get more money. I think that that's poor business, and that I agree with one of the other speakers, and that other states should actually be copying us. So I would just urge that you vote against this, and that we go come back to the table and do this. That would be fair and right for the charities in Alaska. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Next, we have Nancy DeCherney. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Nancy DeCherney. I am not representing anybody at the moment. I retired as an arts administrator, executive director, and I would simply say that I feel like moving to an online situation is the future, so we should work on making something that works for the state of Alaska and for the Alaska nonprofits. The charitable gaming is a really important way for the arts and sports and education and all those things to have augmented funding. Really, really important. I can't really speak to the technology or the technical stuff in all of this, but I will just say please do what you can to make it so that charitable gaming can continue to support the nonprofits in our state. It's very important. And thank you for all your hard work. I appreciate the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Next, we have Michael Tice. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, hello. My name is Michael Price. I'm representing the King Oilers Baseball Club and Old Town Bingo. And we are actually in favor of this. For us, bingo has been in a steady decline over the past decade. And bingo was allowed an electronic component as well. They have handheld devices that we're allowed to use in the bingo hall. I view this more as an extension of that for pull tabs. And it looks to me like it actually will increase our revenue. The numbers are way different, so you're kind of comparing apples to oranges, but it is, in all appearances, going to make our revenue higher. So that's really all I have to say.
Thank you. Next, we have Paulette Joy. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Paulette Joy.
Mrs. Joy, you might be muted, or okay.
Hello?
Oh, yep, there you are. Go ahead.
Yes, my name is Paulette Joy, and I am the president of AMBETS Post 2 Ladies Auxiliary, also the Department of Alaska, and I'm also an AMBETS National Ladies Auxiliary member. And I am in favor of this bill. We need to get the revenue in to help as being a veteran service organization to help our veterans, their families, and our active military. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Sherry Fulton. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony. Sherry Fulton, please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, this is Sherry Fulton. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Please proceed.
Okay. I'm with the Amber Brady's Auxiliary here in Anchorage. I'm also a department president, and I'm in favor of this bill. We need to provide revenue for our military, and we're not getting a lot of people that are doing bake sales and things like that. It's just we're not getting enough revenue for this. With the COVID thing that's happening, people are not responding to gatherings like that. However, they will play the pool tab, and that gives them a little bit of joy, gives us revenue, and I guess that's all I can say. I'm in favor of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Michelle Sass. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is Michelle Sass. I am representing myself mostly, but I am a member of Post 29 American Legion Auxiliary Unit 29. And I'd first like to just mention that of the negative comments or the people who have mentioned being against this bill, it's my understanding that it doesn't affect paper pull tabs. It only adds to the ability to increase the earnings available for charities. Our charity relies on the pull tabs, and we would rely on the electronic pull tabs and look forward to getting that increase in money because, as the previous testimony stated, that we really do rely on that for our veterans, their families, our communities, our youth organizations. And if you increase the money by 10%, you increase the money by 10%. And believe me, an organization like this would take that. We appreciate it. It helps our people. And that's what we're here and what we're about for. So that was my testimony.
Okay, thank you. Next, we have Charles Boring. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Charles Boring. I'm from Anchorage. I've been a resident for the last 40 years. 20 of those years, I've been involved in nonprofits. I'm actually representing myself, even though I heard the transmitting from Michelle. I am also, I've been commander of American Legion 29 for 7 out of the last 20 years. The electronic gaming position that I've heard, obviously the operators are really looking hard at it, and I understand because this is their bread and butter. However, that's a business. Ours is a nonprofit business. The Legion and all the veterans organizations are nonprofit. Based on what I've been able to look at, which I have not seen the bill, unfortunately, and these guys have looked at it pretty hard, there must be a lot of shortfalls in it. I can see that the people that have looked at it are looking hard because it definitely affects their operation. I believe that as I was and thought that this was supposed to be, this is an additional to the $2 million that is authorized now. This could be an additional 2 or maybe 3 million more. If that's actually in there, the comments that I've made, I do support the electronic gaming. I do not know if I can support the bill as it's written based on the comments that I've heard. It's a huge increase. We'll provide more money for all our charities in the state and all the money that we give to our veterans and other organizations. ROTC, many other and people that are nonprofit running outside the state parts for things that they can't get state money for. I would be glad to be involved in any kind of rewrite on this, but I still say that I've seen the pull tabs, I've seen the the electronic pull tabs. I've seen the way that the demo modes, and all I know is if you guys have ever been to Vegas or you know anybody's been to Vegas, electronic gaming is not only here, it needs to be here as well. And whatever way that you see fit to put that, that's it needs to be here. We need to get it in. That's what I have. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next, we have Krista Foley. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Krista Foley. I am involved in several of the veteran clubs in the state of Alaska, but specifically I am the department commander for the AMVETS Club. I have heard a lot of the testimony today, and I understand their concerns, but as a small nonprofit, the military clubs really, really rely on what we get from pull tabs. From my understanding, this will not affect our paper pull tabs. I know a lot of people think they will, but I've seen it happen at the bingo clubs. It didn't stop them from buying paper bingo games. They just added the electronics to them. I've seen it other places. I've talked to other AMVETS organizations outside of the state of Alaska that have gone to using the electronic system, and they have nothing but good things to say about it. And they've shared that with me when I had conversation with them. I see this as a positive for our state. Electronic gaming is here. It's been here for a long time. It's time for it to come to Alaska. I don't see it any different than the Alaska Lotto that we play, all online, all electronic. I believe that this would be a benefit to us in the end. So I hope you seriously consider those of us, very small nonprofits as well, that use this gaming money to help us serve our community, especially our veterans and their families, and all the things that we do across the state. I want to thank you for your time, and good luck in your decision.
Thank you. Next, we have Diana Tice. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Hello, my name is Diana Tice. I am with Old Town Bingo in Kenai. We are a multi-beneficiary committee, and we support three local nonprofits. I am in support of HB 200. I think the addition to electronic pull tabs would help grow our customer base. We are currently competing with smartphones while people play bingo. So if we gave them the option to play bingo and play electronic pull tab simultaneously, I think we would see an increase in what our customer engagement. I'd like to see the businesses given the opportunity to add it to their program. It does not take away paper pull tabs, but I think the electronic world is already happening in the matter of smartphones. And I think this would help keep our bingo halls and our pull tab rooms full and keep the customer engaged. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right, coming back to the room, is there anybody else wishing to testify on House Bill 200? No? Okay, seeing none, we will close public testimony. I am going to set this bill aside. We'll consult with committee members on an amendment deadline, and we'll go notice that amendment deadline to the committee. Seeing no other business before us, that concludes our business for today. We will adjourn. Let the record reflect the time is 4:43 p.m.